Hi, I'm Nicola Graham, and welcome to Chewing Over High Performance. In this episode, I'll be exploring the question, who is the customer in healthcare, with Angela Schott, an expert physiotherapist and clinical services lead. But first, thanks to our sponsor, Nucle. Nucle is a comprehensive practice management system for allied health practices and clinics, ranging from small to large, as well as multi-location. Nucle is designed to deliver both clinical and management perspectives, so practitioners, practice managers, and business owners can achieve their desired outcomes. Nucle understands the importance of performance and therefore looks to deliver these results for you. Nucle would like to offer the first 100 listeners an exclusive 25% discount on their data conversion and migration in 2024. Just visit nucle.com/promotions/MSK24 to start a free trial with the coupon code MSK24, and you'll receive 25% off your first data conversion and migration. Thank you, Nucle, for your support for the MSK industry. In this latest episode, I'm joined by Angela Schott, a specialist physiotherapist and clinical leader. Angela's career has seen her work at national MSK organisations, and she's currently heading up the clinical services at 10 Health and Fitness in London. Alongside her clinical qualification, she has undertaken leadership and management training, including an MBA. Angela and I met through membership of the MSKPN, a trade organisation looking to drive quality standards in MSK. And what is interesting in MSKPN is that there is a wide range of businesses and members, and there are some wide conversations that occur related to the market and the industry. And so Angela and I believe it is really insightful for us to have this conversation, who is the customer in healthcare? Angela, welcome to the episode. And for that kind of question, what would be your response?
Oh, thank you for having me, first of all, Nicola, for the lovely intro. I think it's probably quite unique in the UK. Like, I think it's quite interesting that clients or customers have different ways of accessing services in healthcare. So whether that's through, you know, most commonly maybe the NHS, or whether that's through private medical insurance or medical legal services, or just self-funding it themselves. But I do think the question is more around the route that you access depends on who the customer might be for the service provider. So if you're coming through on more of a contracted route and not self-funding it, the customer isn't necessarily the client that sat in the room with you. And that's an interesting concept to explore for businesses, but also for how clinicians feel in that instance and are able to deliver the best quality of care for the patient, as well as supporting the customer, if that makes sense.
Completely. And I think there's a few kind of different aspects to that, isn't there? There's like the more complicated the routes and the systems become, the more barriers there are to people accessing healthcare, the kind of, I suppose, aspects around transparency of what that looks like. But also, as clinicians, we would be aiming to treat everyone equitably and the same from the clinical care. But that's not always the case when we have, well, it can be the case from the clinical, but what becomes how long we can spend with someone or not, that all creates barriers and confusion and, I suppose, kind of lack of clarity. How do you navigate that?
As a clinician or as a business?
Let's start as a clinician, and then we can bring in the kind of like the business commercial and what that starts to look like as well.
Yeah. You know, I think over the years of kind of your professional clinical career, that's definitely one of the initial challenges that you're approached with is we all have this gold standard service that we should be providing for clients to either achieve their function or just their, you know, elevated version of their health, right? And unfortunately, sometimes that is constrained by limitations of what we contractually should provide or can provide in terms of outcome measures when doing contracted care. I think the main way that I feel clinicians navigate that is by putting as much as they can into the clinical time that they spend, sometimes to the detriment of them as an individual. And that could be down to people having to take work home, write notes outside of, clinic as such, to or do reports outside of clinic to make sure that they always feel like they're giving that client 100%, 110%. And that's because we're empathetic creatures. Now, I don't think that should always be the way. I feel like there should be some transparency and ability to be transparent with clients as to where our constraints might lie, how they can have a choice to navigate those constraints if they want to, and what that means in terms of their care and the ability that we can provide. And as you grow more through your career with your experience, I think you learn to still deliver an incredibly high quality aspect of care, but that isn't just measured by what you physically do with that client. That is measured by everything, from your client interaction and treatment prescription to your communication to your, legal obligation of notes or your external reports to consultants or other providers, so that the client is actually getting their most kind of informed and individualized amount of care within the constraints that you're allowed to work towards.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, there's so much aspects to it that we have to think about, not just sometimes that clinical interaction that happens in that half hour or hour appointment, but that whole experience that someone gets. And I suppose both of our careers, I think, have majoritively sat in the commercial and like independent private sectors. However, obviously, and the bit that seeing as we don't both work in the NHS at the moment, but it's probably worth highlighting is that regardless of what business model or setting you work in, there will be constraints on how you deliver your practice. The same within public health systems and within private practice. So this isn't like a topic solely around, in some respects, private health insurance, because all services will be delivered in a way, in a setting, and there will be constraints to how that delivers. I suppose personally for me, my feeling why I went into private is that it gave me a bit more flexibility and autonomy in how I wanted to deliver it. Hey, I don't think I've ever actually asked you, have you worked in NHS and public health systems, or did you go straight from?
I've always worked in the private sector, but I've delivered a significant amount of NHS contracts. So what I was going to actually say is I would still think that NHS contracting is probably the most common touch point for all clinicians, whether they work, in a solely private practice, whether they work in a practice that does some contracting through the government, NHS, or private medical insurance, or whether they work in the NHS themselves, because there's such a high proportion of it that is, contracted or kind of delivered in a spectrum. So they might be doing the FCP or the APP pathway, but then still working, in a GP practice, but then still working for a private provider delivering that service. So I definitely delivered a large amount. And I actually think that's probably considered, one of the most common contractors across all different markets for physiotherapy.
Yeah, and I think that's the bit that possibly if you're delivering that clinical service that you may not have a complete handling or knowledge on, where we talk about B2B and B2C kind of markets. Is it worth us probably just explaining that to listeners in case those aren't kind of even common terms? How do you understand them?
I think the way I work that in healthcare is what we've already sort of started to touch on, where your B2B is your business to business. So it's almost your contractile work. So if I'm a physiotherapy provider, but I have a contract with maybe my local council to provide maybe disability assessments, or with the NHS to provide services for their clients, or with, a PMI provider. Although the person that is walking into my clinic is a patient, my client is actually in that contracted relationship. So my client would actually be my PMI provider or the NHS or the government, whereas the person walking through the door and being treated by me is the patient. And if we were to then to look at the opposite of that, a B2C, a business to consumer service, that's where you're providing that directly to the individual. So that would most commonly be clients that are walking off the street and self-funding their care with you. They're not coming in under any other wider or mass contracted service.
Yeah, and as we've alluded to, there's kind of differences within those from, I suppose, a business model perspective. But how do you, having worked and been a leader in quite large teams and that, do you have those kind of conversations with your physios and your clinical team, or as to who is the client and how does that communication or process or system kind of differ?
Yeah, I think you have to, because with any of those B2B contracts, you're going to have signed, contractile key performance indicators. So you're going to have signed, we will do this service for maybe X fee. And within that, we will aim to work towards maybe an average number of sessions, most commonly an average improvement around a certain time frame or number of sessions. And this totally depends on the service that you're providing and who you're providing it for. If you don't make that aware to the clinician who's providing the service, there's a challenge that you could fault. You could falter on what you've signed and legally agreed to provide. And if I manage a team of 30, clinicians, and we have to deliver an average session of maybe five for a standard treatment of care, and they're delivering 15, I'm significantly under servicing my contract. So they need to be aware of that 100%. I think the challenge where it really comes is I don't feel, and I might be wrong, but I tend to find we don't have true transparency between that being explained to a client as to what those metrics are that we have to deliver towards, and not even deliver towards, that we have legally signed to deliver towards. And that's incredibly challenging because wording in a legal contract is going to be very specific.
And
Clients,
not very
healthcare.
patient or human-centered to
Yeah,
is it
and not
black and white?
individualized. We can look at it very easily from an acute physiotherapy treatment journey could be two sessions. A chronic post-operative journey could be 25 sessions because the people are going to be completely different. And I tend to find that working within the MSK community and speaking to other professionals and my own experience and our team's experience with clients, there's often very mixed messages that are delivered to clients in terms of what they are accessing through their contracted care. And that might be in the NHS setting through the media or other routes. I'm not, it might be in the PMI setting through maybe what their policies say versus how that matches to what the providers have been contracted to. And that's a really difficult line for businesses to understand how to navigate because, like you said,
And how much is commercially sensitive? How much are we allowed to kind of I'd have to probably reread our contract as to what it actually says from the point of view of that communication with. Because I think we all have actually had experiences, whether right or wrong, where a PMI provider has said, have unlimited sessions, have 10 sessions, have 20 sessions, kind of thing. And but the communication that comes to us as an organization is, please keep your sessional average at X or
Yeah,
something. So it's like, how do we navigate this?
and PMI is a great example of this, right? Because not only are you contracted by the provider, so whoever the private medical insurance person is, they're also going to sell a wide variety of individualized, different priced, and then therefore different access policies. So there might be clients who do have unlimited because of the policy that they have. So not only are you having to navigate this relationship as the service provider for the PMI provider, but you're also navigating this relationship on behalf of the PMI provider from the client. Because clients might be saying, well, actually, I've been told that I can get whatever I want out of my PMI insurance and they should just give it to me. And that might not be the policy that they have access to, or that might not be the service that they have access to. So you're kind of this middleman navigating this on behalf of everybody. And, we could do examples for this. I feel like it's not, I don't want people to take the narrative that it's just PMI. That's the
No.
same with the NHS. People will come into the NHS, very much wanting maybe a certain quality of service or something that they might have read in the news or heard in the news. Examples of that is when acupuncture was rife, and it would almost be, well, I'm entitled to six sessions of this. And you're the person navigating that, that might not be the best route for you. And that's becoming even more apparent in FCP roles, where people come in, well, I want medication for this. Actually, maybe this is what we need to do for you. And you're that middleman for both sides of those clients, if you like.
And we can add in even just briefly another layer of complexity to this, which becomes the B2B to C kind of model from the point of view of quite a lot of these policies, if we just stick on the PMI for a minute before we kind of switch conversation, is they are negotiated by an corporate employer for a large group of employees at the same time. So there is then another middleman of kind of what the employer is looking for, who also again has their own, I suppose, drivers and motivations to keep people at work and make sure that they are healthy, well employees as well. So I think, I suppose it comes down to, and the bit that I'm getting from it is, there's a lot as a practitioner that you have to, or I feel would benefit to understand in these aspects, because it creates context to the clinical service that you're delivering.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways that we could also improve some of these components, whether that's in service design, service delivery, or just transparency, like, you know, meeting with people from different contractors, but what are you happy for us to say on your behalf to your clients that we are servicing? Because these are the challenges that it approaches with us. So where we know there are a lot of grey areas, but where are the boundaries of those grey areas? And how can we navigate those in a way that you appreciate is acceptable around that type of, you know, either KPI or whatever it might be? Because that's often the challenge, is there's a lot of process in these elements, and there's not necessarily those direct communication links, either from a clinical perspective or from a business perspective. So it's quite difficult for us to ever know where the lines in the sand lie. And therefore, you know, at some points we could be potentially underservicing a client because of the policy constraints, so going up to those levels, when actually the bigger picture of that wider entire contract, the provider might be happy for us to give that little bit extra, because it still comes out all in the wash.
How can
we have those conversations to understand that? How can we know how we're performing for that provider above and beyond just the specific KPIs, and sometimes even the specific KPIs, which we might have visibility of.
Yeah, and the other obviously massive stakeholder in this is the patient, the client kind of thing, and what their expectations are, and bringing it back to that kind of human patient-centered care from a clinical perspective. But also, if we are just thinking about it just from an organizational kind of management perspective, you also get people that come who have no idea what their policy is beforehand. They just know that they have private health insurance, but they don't know that there's an excess that they have to pay to the provider. They don't. So there is a degree of, I suppose, kind of, and I think this came out in one of the latest like independent health hospital publications, is that people are actually quite happy to access private healthcare, but the health, the communication, the education about what that system looks like or how to navigate it doesn't really exist, because we have quite a probably relatively unique setting in the UK to have so many different ways you can access healthcare.
Yeah, and even more so when it gets outside of the physio remit, but get into the secondary care remit. So when you're then going into, you know, whether it's scanning or diagnostics or surgery, I think that the lack of linking up and clarity of the UK healthcare system becomes more and more obvious. And it's really difficult, I think, for clients to actually, or patients, sorry, to understand the best routes to take, how to take those routes, what it might involve, when to use something, when maybe to not use it, if that's not to the benefit of them. It's really, really hard. And all providers are very different.
And we've noticed that even from the point of view of when new staff members join, or people are like, how do I refer to this? I'm like, well, you need to give me a bit more information. Well, how do I refer to it? And I was like, you need to tell me like how they're coming, what they're like conditioning, because there are so many options. It's not just a straightforward, here's the policy kind of thing, because it just differs nearly in each individual setting to some degree.
Yeah, and you're seeing a lot of people trying to look at some of these problems and approach them from a tech function as well. I think we might come onto this if we end up talking a bit more about KPIs, right? Because you can see people trying to solve some of these problems. So whether it's systems that link up multiple healthcare communication, whether it's billing systems being built into, you know, note systems and diary systems, or whatever it might be, we're definitely trying to approach them. The challenge is, I think, until we look at our whole healthcare system together and try and create something that is going to work for everything from NHS to private market to PMI. We're just putting a little plaster over that kind of annoyance. We're not really finding a solution.
Yeah. My understanding is quite a lot of your clinical work is like second opinion and kind of end up being quite relatively, I suppose, complex conditions because people have been in the system for a while or have had a long going problem. How do you navigate those conditions, which I'm going to make the assumption sometimes need more input, depending if they are coming from, for example, a self-paying route or a PMI route? How do you kind of factor that in when it's not a simple ankle sprain and off they go kind of aspect?
Yeah, it's really challenging. You know, in terms of what do I factor in, not really a huge difference to my treatment. I still provide, you know, the best quality of treatment in terms of what I find and what needs to be done. The clinical frustration is often I'm starting back at the beginning, and it's usually the earlier stage of whether that's kind of diagnostic rehab, the more simplistic element hasn't been done. Often, usually there's a big manual component that hasn't been done, so then people's issues have exacerbated over time as they have a regular joint alignment, mobility, tissue function because we haven't addressed it early on. So from a clinical perspective, that's really frustrating, Nicola, because I'm not finding something that means they're still at this stage and is just that little elevation. I'm having to usually restart, and by that point they've either come through multiple surgeries or they've come through then with actual the joint above or below causing problems because we've just compounded issues. When it comes down to PMI or other services that they're using, I have a lot of people that have maybe been rehabilitated within the NHS, not got function or have regressed, and then come privately from a consultant more, you know, kind of forceful recommendation because they're ending up back at the consultant saying, should I have more surgery? It's got worse. Okay. It's come back. And the consultant saying, no, there's nothing internal. This has got to be your rehabilitation. And sadly, with waiting times, I'm seeing them 3-4 years down the line post-surgery, and they're almost back at day one, if not presenting with multiple injuries. But from a PMI perspective, I then have the added challenge. So those clients, sorry, will end up self-funding.
Yeah.
And really struggling psychologically around their rehab. And that's a lot of what I end up having to deal with is more treatment of where they are psychologically in their journey, because this has been so long. And they're then having these consistent elements of why didn't I do this before? And the effects that they put that upon themselves. That's probably a whole other discussion. With PMI, I'm then often, you know, they're being rejected further care. So maybe they have been seen by somebody else, and as a result, this might become a pre-existing condition, or a lot of policies will say they don't treat chronic conditions, yet they're happy to maybe do more surgery that isn't needed. And this is where I talk about that industry element. It boggles my mind why people wouldn't invest in that, you know, proper recovery, and how can we measure ourselves to show better outcomes, regardless of second opinion, you know, work or who's done it, but they would invest in a multi-£1,000 surgery that might not be needed. And that's really difficult for clients as well, because sometimes they also end up actually self-funding because the PMI won't fund it because it's not covered anymore. And that's really hard. That's really hard for me because, you know, I don't revel in the fact that, you know, people have to pay to see me privately anyway, let alone do I revel in the fact that they could have accessed these services with, they should have accessed these services without having to fund it. But because of the service they previously had, they now can't.
Yeah. So I think there's a few aspects in there, and I think it's quite topical to actually one of the MSK MAG articles that went out just a week or so ago, which was basically where's rehab gone, or where is rehab, and how do we, and I know obviously CSP have done quite a few kind of promotions are trying to about rehab works and where is that rehab. So that's a real, it's such a kind of like string to physio's bow, but there's like such an extreme of now how MSK Physio is delivered from a diagnostic FCP to then those that want to invest in kind of long-term rehab and S&C kind of programs and functional rehab. It's I sometimes look at it from kind of an outside physio MSK that commissioners or insurance companies think, well, what do we do? Or how do we fund physiotherapy? Because it becomes a physio becomes the wide arching kind of umbrella, but actually there's so many aspects to it that it's like, how do we start to navigate that narrative as a profession really as well?
I think
just a small question.
another 4 hours
just,
on the clock.
Just a Friday afternoon.
I think it's a difficult one. You know, I talk a lot about, I would always take this back to people's perceptions of healthcare and physiotherapy and healthcare. And, you know, because we have the NHS, because we typically train through the NHS, we have a real difficult perception of monetizing healthcare, I think, in the UK. And often what that means is, even with contract work, people maybe start at what should it cost and then work down to, so for that cost, I might be wrong, this might be my opinion, by the way, what can we deliver?
Yeah.
And rather than flipping it and having an understanding of maybe outcomes, what are we expecting? How do we achieve that? What effect will that have on the client? But what effect will that have on, you know, waiting list, further cost, further need for other services?
Long-term investment, yeah.
And what does this cost? And then how do we offset that? That's how I would approach that conversation. It's not what is the cost of physiotherapy, and if we're saying that the average session needs to move from, you know, 5 to 15 because they need that end stage rehab, and we need to stop accepting 60% improvement as better. That's not better. You know, how do we transition that? I think we actually have to look at what should service be to achieve greater function, and then offset that cost on the other elements that people would not be accessing, whether that is surgery, medication, because they've lost function, they've then put on weight, they're then having issues with joint pain, stuff that we can probably categorically have evidence for now within how long our systems have been running in this way, or how long we have been delivering MSK services.
Yeah.
But I just think we look at cost of service as the main measure, and then what can you give me for that amount of money?
Yeah. And that's quite, it's a reverse engineering of it in some degree, but it also fits into the whole conversation that seems to be happening quite globally, actually, when I listen to conversations in America and Australia around value-based healthcare and what that starts to look at. So it probably quite nicely leads us onto that aspect around metrics and what outcomes from, let's say, a clinical, but also more of an organizational or experience point of view, what do you value as those outcomes, or what become the most important ones for you?
Yeah, I think it depends on the hat that you're sitting with, right? Because clinically, again, there's outcomes that will be measurable to the client. So I would argue that the biggest outcome that a client will care about is most predominantly pain, because most injured clients that are coming to us are in pain. If we're not talking about performance enhancement, we're talking about treatment of people who are struggling with conditions. Pain is their first measure, and then secondary function, and then thirdly, maybe performance. Oh, well, now that I can do this, I want to do it quicker or better.
Yeah.
And whereas for clinicians, the challenge we have is pain is on a scale. We most commonly, people use a variety of different scales, but say a numerical one. I think it's really difficult for clients to often see a decrease or an increase. I feel most clients' minds, especially if they are in chronic or second opinion, is either I have it or I don't have it.
Okay.
And as clinicians, I value other metrics that allow me to show progression and improvement away from a client's perception. Between that, you have pain and you don't have pain. Because post-operatively, or even second opinion-wise, chronicity-wise, they might always have a degree of pain. It might take me a year to completely get rid of that pain on everything. So jumping, running, climbing trees. I need to be able to show progressive improvement across all that time. And that's where I think we look at things like some of the more tech stuff that is coming in. So whether that's being able to show asymmetries or power or add value and numerical data to the eyes that we have, and the ability for us to say, oh, look, see, because what I can see is you have a deconditioning of this, or do you know what I mean? You're struggling with your posterior chain. Look at these numbers and these tests that show us that. But also look that in the last 3 or 4 weeks, you've increased your power by 70%.
I've had some great conversations with Dom, one of our physios, about he what Vowed Technology has done for him is created a much clearer process and milestones in his head than for his rehab process. He had it, but he couldn't objectify it. And now, to also relate that to like normative data across age categories or genders, he's finding, like, for example, there was someone the other day, and it was like suddenly that quad hamstring ratio had a real context, because it was, while they actually didn't have a large asymmetry within the normative data of what their hamstring or their posterior chain strength should be, they were way, way off. And so it really does create metrics. It creates context and insights that we just didn't have as practitioners. I think it's great.
It helps you manage that client, and also not just manage them in terms of time frames and expectations, and instead of here, you're here with your normative data. It allows you to celebrate their success, for them to understand the outcomes of the effort that they are putting in above and beyond pain. And you'll see this if you treat people for a long period of time. I find this where they'll come in and it might be a really awful degenerative knee that's only been told they can have surgery. I think of a client who is, got young kids. Do you know what I mean? That's incredibly disruptive to that environment. They come in, they may have absolutely no, muscle kind of bulk, if you like, because of the years of pain and degeneration they've had. Completely transform their function. They can't walk without pain, sitting down, they're using their hands, they're in discomfort all the time, standing, sitting. You transform all of that. They're then skiing, they're running around with their kids all the time. They still have pain because they have a severe degenerative knee. But it is a fraction of what it is interruption-wise their function. And we can see that as clinicians, because I'm like, how can you see that? But it's taken them such a long period of time with such small little increments to get to that, that they will still come in and go, is it better? And I'm like, that's a whole different thing. And the movement you're doing, what you're lifting in the gym, activities that you're doing that you previously were not able to do. You're skiing 4 times in the ski season. Like, when was the last time you did that? And I do think things like we mentioned Val, but your objective technical data really allows you to cement that with a number. Because if you'd measured that person at the beginning of their journey and they've then increased their muscle bulk and therefore their power, their asymmetry, their stability, their control by massive leaps, it takes away that question. And then it allows us to step into an area where we explain to people around prevention and longevity. So you're younger, you've got that ability to build function. When you start going into those later years of life, you need to do this to maintain. So don't
A
lose
quality of
this
life,
function. Yeah, exactly. And then you start completely changing how that metric works, and your support and your quality of service for a client's life is phenomenally different than just managing an injury when it happens, or an injury when they don't have range. You're going above and beyond that care component.
And that's the conversations that we sometimes now end up having with clients is, okay, well, you've reached that goal, like whatever their PSFS, for example, was that they'd set. It's like, what next? What do you want to do next, kind of thing. So if we think about the ecosystem of kind of healthcare, we seem to be getting some practitioner and clinician buy-in to objectivity and so those some of those clinical outcomes. We're getting consultants who actually are saying, I want to see this data at their 6 week or their 12 week kind of check. What starts to turn the conversation? We need some larger stakeholder also to take an interest, I think, in these outcomes beyond what the traditional, I suppose, forms or subjective objective data has requests have been for us to be able to demonstrate that value. And I suppose that's where part of MSKPN's work, but hopefully wider, is that the value of what data in MSK care can do. How are you implementing that, or your thoughts on it within the services that you lead?
Yeah, I think it's a real difficulty, isn't it? Because as soon as we put something on a pedestal, you know, whatever we wanted to take from that, like they should have perfect asymmetries, they should have this power to body weight ratio, whatever it could be. People are so individualized that we always know there's going to be outliers. And I actually think healthcare and people add in demographics and gender, race, age, depending on, especially with women, as to where they are in terms of their kind of life cycle of whether they're menopausal, perimenopausal, all of that, every single element would need like a different measure.
Yeah.
Right. And so the more we try to standardize these things as there is just one element of where they should be or between these lines. And we've seen that over the years. We've seen that over the years when we look at evidence for practice, whether it's in sport or football, when, you know, it's only ever done or considered around these demographics. And as a result, you then have whole other demographics that are outside of that. And we just kind of ignore them or think, oh, they're just abnormal. So I don't know how we would get a real true, you know, we talk about norms. I think that that is something to build up and to be able to actually show, yes, with your gender and age, as it is kind of most commonly now, this is the norm. But how much data would we need? And then even when you think about clinical application, so rehabbing an ACL injury, rehabbing an ankle inversion, there's no way we could standardize that process for clinicians. So someone could get X norm that is 25% above the standard norm, and how do we then, you know, encourage that when everybody's allowed to quite rightly be an independent practitioner and find their way of getting the best results? It's needed by an agreement of a whole industry. It's needed by an agreement of all the stakeholders that you've touched on, and not necessarily just what can we put on here that just satisfies some components, like a PSFS and an MPS and a global rating of change. You know, and how can we actually agree on maybe overarching metrics and what we should show improvement for? I definitely agree they should still be patient reported to a degree. I think that's really important because that allows an element of their individuality and what care means to them and their injury. And, you know, if we put pain measures on, it's not really a fair metric if the whole clinic specializes in chronic spinal injuries. Or chronic joint injuries. So I think we need proper industry discussion about it, if I'm honest. I don't think there's a silver bullet. I don't think there's one answer.
No.
And I don't think I necessarily have it.
But I think that comes around to kind of that initial part of this question, really, is who is the customer, but also because there are different customers, the complexity around healthcare, and even from conversations I've had with kind of organizations trying to bring products or services into healthcare or NHS. It's like, oh, well, the NHS is the customer. And it's like, is it? Like, so it is an area that I think I'm glad we've had this discussion to try to kind of, I suppose, navigate some aspects of that. If there was one kind of like leaving point that you could, for the listeners around thinking about kind of who is the customer in healthcare, is there some kind of line or something that you use within your teams that helps people navigate this quite complex area of service delivery?
The biggest thing I would say, I think, is be transparent. Be transparent to your customers. I am, you know, although we have contracts, I do talk about what that involves. And I always link that back to clinical service. So often clients have a appreciation that, well, if this is nice, I want to continue just having it forever. Physios get quite disgruntled with the fact of, I'm not just here as a glorified PT or as a glorified massage therapist, as a glorified this. So I think continually looking to understand what is that client trying to achieve it. When they have achieved it, celebrate them and reward them. Celebrate that they have achieved that with your support so they can be in control of their healthcare. Because that's when you're not going to get people going, well, I just want to keep coming. And then challenge yourself to consistently improve. If someone comes back and they are 90% better, challenge yourself on could they be 100 and what might make them 100%. And we need to stop accepting 60%.
Thank you, Angela.
As an approval. Yeah, be transparent would be my thing, Nicola. Be professionally transparent for your contractors, as in your managing your client's opinion of that service, and also for your clients to managing your relationship and opinion of the service you're providing.
Brilliant. I think we'll leave it there. That's really great insights. I thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your time. Well, that is the end of this episode of Chewing Over High Performance. And it's really insightful for me to have that conversation with Angela, an experienced clinician and leader within healthcare. We touched upon that real key, I suppose, concept around transparency and that feeling that it's probably not always there at the moment. But how do we start to navigate those complex aspects around healthcare, how to involve all stakeholders in that communication, and what does that actually look like going forward? In the next episode, I'll be joined by Josh Catlett, and we're going to be discussing investment in MSK and in healthcare, how to marry those clinical as well as commercial needs, and the trying to bring everyone to the table to try to have that conversation. So if you are a practitioner and maybe your organisation has gone through some changes, or you're a leader of business and you're thinking about kind of growth plans and investment, or you maybe you're a founder of a startup and you've got a new innovation or new idea, how do you start to get investment and what does that start to look like? I hope you look forward to that conversation.